And there they are, the choir boys. And you all know what that means. That's the spirit. And here's Professor Emeritus Peter Lynham. What are we talking about today, Professor?
We are going to be talking about Buddhism.
Buddhism. Well, take it away. Tell us more.
Okay. And the reason why we're talking about this is I was invited to a friend's house to hear a talk by another friend of mine who had been on a Buddhist pilgrimage to India. And it was fascinating because as she explained what she understood Buddhism to be, I realized I was experiencing the exact opposite of what I've sometimes experienced of Christians trying to convert people. This was Buddhists trying to convert people, which is pretty interesting because you don't think of Buddhism as particularly a conversionist religion.
Mm.
And moreover, you don't normally think of Buddhism in connection with India. I mean, the countries of Buddhism are pretty obvious, aren't they? What would you name, Harry?
Well, I would probably say China, you know, I guess Japan as well, with that Zen Buddhism kind of thing going on. And Thailand, this kind of those Southeast Asian countries.
Yes, indeed. Exactly right. But the thing was, the original Buddhism did originate somewhere in the 6th century BCE in North India. And it's just got wiped out of India almost completely in the the 11th century, it would seem, probably by a combination of poor Hindu opposition to this religion, which was trying to reform Hinduism, and I think a fair bit of opposition from Islam, because the Maharajas more or less took over India at about this time. But they're back in India now and creating a kind of sacred pilgrimage site, and it looks like quite a lot of people from Thailand, from Japan, and from New Zealand are really interested in going to the tour of where the Buddha is supposed to have been born, where he received his moment of enlightenment under the tree, and where he passed away. And so this was a slideshow with a difference, if you like. It's quite interesting. And the bit that I thought you might be intrigued by, I was certainly intrigued by, is that the way to enter Buddhism, I think, for most people in New Zealand, is a feeling that it's somehow not as religious as, say, Christianity or Judaism or Islam. You know, they're not trying to trap you in rituals.
Yes, yeah, I've heard people say, "Oh, Buddhism is more of a philosophy than a religion, almost." You know, it's like a way to live your life more than it is. It's like a spiritual philosophy.
Yeah, and that's precisely how it was described on Saturday night, and I think this is most intriguing because what's happened in the past 100 years, I guess, is that a distinctive type of Western Buddhism has emerged, which has stripped a lot of the religious trappings from Buddhism. But let me assure you that if you were to go to Thailand or Myanmar or Vietnam or even China, where they try to control it pretty closely too, there's an enormous number of trappings of Buddhism. You know, there's a priesthood, there's ordination, there's monks, there's begging, there's rituals that you need to follow. But the image of creating a scientific religion that would be good for our mental health, that's effectively the way in which I think most Western Buddhists would understand that.
A scientific religion, so it's kind of like, it's kind of a means to an end rather than an end in of itself. It's kind of like, oh, we'll be Buddhist so we feel better, rather than Buddhism is a good thing to believe.
Yes, and in fact, what's quite interesting is that since the way in is almost inevitably through meditation, that the courses on meditation often have no Buddhist trappings at all, though if you dig a little bit deeper, you will find that they have somehow connected this with Buddhism. And it's intriguing that, especially within the Catholic Church, there are very strong advocates of meditation that had their origins in Buddhist practice, but have gone through a curious kind of Christian baptism, which is an interesting thought.
That is funny.
But in this case, no, that's not what it was. It was much more somebody who had quite clearly abandoned Christianity for this better way. And the aspect that perhaps most intrigued me is I, a few years ago, decided, I think it was during the COVID lockdown, to go on a cycle ride and track down all the Buddhist temples in Auckland and Buddhist meditation centres and the like. Well, you see, it's only the Western one, the Tiratna group or Friends of Western Buddhist Order, as it used to be called, that it calls it a meditation centre. In most cases, of course, it's temple that people are looking at. Those temples really don't have many Western followers. So, you know, all around the edges of Auckland, there's some quite magnificent Buddhist temples being built, which are very religious. I mean, you've perhaps heard of the one in Derry Flat that was proposing a statue of the Buddha so enormous that the neighbours were horrified and protested against it.
I've been to the one Buddhist temple that I've been to is the one in Christchurch, that has a vegetarian cafe attached to it, and it's also got an art gallery. It's like the I'm just looking it up right now, the Fo Guan Chan one.
Yes. And see that particular Buddhist tradition, which also has its equivalent, there's a branch, the bigger branch is in Flatbush Road in Auckland. And is, you know, these two are founded by, I think they're Taiwanese, with a lot of money that's come. They planted these shrines all around the edges of the Pacific coast, if you like. But these are very religious. You know, if I remember rightly, does the Christchurch one have a group of ordained women?
Yeah, it's all women. It's
That's right. The same in Auckland. Because they haven't been able to find the men to run it, the ordained priests. So the emergence of ordained women in Buddhism is something of a new thing. But let it be said, these are very, very religious groups. And they wouldn't have that big an attraction to people outside, but they are, as you say, the restaurants are marvellous. The one in Auckland I can also recommend.
Yeah, I love the restaurant.
Place to eat. Yeah, and there's something like good produced vegetarian food with a lovely sense of taste that is
it's
so
great,
vital, isn't it?
And they do the one in Christchurch, they do like a festival every now and then. Like they do like the coffee and chocolate festival. Give away chocolate and coffee, and it's all, and there's a band playing. One time there was like a person dressed up as a wizard there as well. They drag a lot of people. I mean, I was intrigued and I went.
Yeah, and I think one would have to say that they wouldn't get away with that in Taiwan, I don't think, because chocolate and Buddhism are not natural companions. But, see, in the Western Buddhist tradition, there are effectively no priests, no monasteries, and no nuns. These are rather people who are practitioners. And it's really very interesting looking at the Auckland Buddhist Centre's website, because you realise it's got no links with the wider Buddhist world. But what it has got links with is with an international Western Buddhism. And so in its own way, what's happened is the West has met Buddhism, but each has made its concessions so that they get along.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that it boils down to practice, practicing meditation and your skill in meditation, which is seen as the essence of it. For a start, happily, they are very, very sympathetic to gay people being involved, and there are gay people involved. So that's rather different from Buddhism, say, in much of the wider Southeast Asian world, where they're very traditional, that matter. And the other aspect that's kind of intriguing is that they don't hold what you would call religious services, whereas if you go into, well, the temple in Flatbush, for example, you know, the gong sounds and the meditation begins. And there's also a lot of emphasis on copying out the writings, the ancient traditions of Buddhism. Whereas in Western Buddhism, there's much less of that because you have to selectively work your way around the Buddhist traditions. So what was really interesting was on Saturday, I discovered that there are Western Buddhists who are very interested still in going back and seeing the life of the Buddha and tracking down the caves where he meditated and the Bodhi trees under which he had revelation. If you like, there is an interesting combination of this, of spiritual tourism with development of one's religious beliefs. Have you heard of the concept of spiritual tourism?
A wee bit. You'll have to tell me more.
Well, so, I mean, this is really developed very recently. And the most famous Christian version of it is in the Spanish tour that one can do, following a route through northern Spain, and ending up at a shrine where you get a certificate saying that you have walked, you've done the pilgrimage. And there's figures on, I think, a Wikipedia page, I think, which show that 30 years ago, there were no people doing this walk. But it has now grown to such a vast number doing the walk that, you have to book in because it's almost impossible to find accommodation unless you travel in agreed parties. So you're talking of, maybe 100,000 people doing the walk a year.
Wow.
Which is phenomenal, isn't it?
So was it a spiritually significant walk prior to the kind of boom?
Well, yes, because you're supposed to pray at each spot, but you also get great exercise. So you can watch this curious adaptation of Christianity and, lots of friends think I'm odd because I haven't wanted to do this particular pilgrimage, but maybe I've just not got the patience to wait in each spot. Some people have been trying to invent pilgrimage tours in New Zealand, and you'd have to ponder, would we end up in Cape Reinga watching our spirits flying towards their death place? I don't know.
Yeah.
But for Buddhists, I think there's a certain paradox in doing the pilgrimage in India which made Buddhism so unwelcome and drove it out of the country. And so that, it had to flee, the surviving Buddhists had to flee either to Sri Lanka or to Thailand to find a space for themselves. And that we saw photographs on Saturday of a huge Buddhist university that between the 3rd century and the 11th century flourished. It was a massive place, apparently, with 10,000 students, but was completely, devastated to the ground in the 11th century. So India has not been the world's most hospitable home to this religion. Part of the factor is that India has been home to any number of religious traditions, because alongside Hindus, you have Sikhs, you have Jain, as well as Buddhism. So Buddhism would be way smaller than Hinduism just because of the sheer vast population of India. And Buddhism, of course, has faced the challenge that monks acting as missionaries took Buddhism to very far distant places. The most fabulous one was the trip to China, to take Buddhism to China and then to Japan. I mean, if you think about that in the days of walking, these are enormous trips to take.
It's huge. I can't imagine how big their thighs would be. Probably quite big thighs walking that much.
Yes. So, you know, in case of the one that came to China, the famous monk who went from China to India and came back, 16 years it took.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Yes, so that's on the long side. So the aspect that is most interesting is, so what did the Buddhism look like when it moved out of India? And, of course, inevitably, just as it's changed being in New Zealand, it really significantly changed in China and even more so in Japan.
Mm.
So in China, it blended with folk religions of various kinds. And so you often find Buddhists, people going to the Buddhist temple and sometimes going to different Buddhist temples, because you also have the emergence of Tibetan Buddhism, which is a very distinctive type of Buddhism altogether. And then in Japan, you have this curious aspect of the blend of Buddhism and Shinto. And so that now is the tradition that you're born a Buddhist and die a Shinto?
Oh.
Because the rituals are there for the different things. I've forgotten the details of this, but it is very distinctive that in Japan, you can really be a completely dedicated advocate of two religions.
Ah, yeah. Well, yeah. I've heard there's been a bit of like a Shinto revival in Japan, and maybe that's kind of responsible for kind of, I guess, more of an emphasis in it, even among Buddhists, maybe?
Yes, I think so. Partly because in Japan, it's a country that modernized and therefore came to view Shinto and to some extent even Buddhism as bad for the modernization. And what emerged in Japan were modified forms of Buddhism known as Nichiren types of Buddhism, which altered the traditions and the customs. But in contemporary Japan, where many people are feeling as though the modern way has let them down, you know, they're searching for the ancient traditions that especially the American occupation did great damage to.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you do hear a lot about people kind of being disenfranchised with, like, you know, Western traditions, whether that's religious or just, you know, cultural, getting into meditation and turning...
Well, I think one of the interesting things about Western Buddhism is that you can start gradually, you know?
Mm.
You can dabble your toes in it by practicing a little meditation.
Yeah, watch a YouTube video. Yeah,
do a minute. Precisely.
Yeah. You go.
Which, and, of course, in some ways, you could argue that that's the same as happening in Christianity, where the old role of baptism and going through these formal initiations seems to have gone out of popularity in some circumstances, you know? So people dabble with whatever religion they're interested in, probably at a cost to the meaning of the religion. But then I'm a historian, want to know what the pure nature is. Maybe I'm just too purist.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, when you think, to me, the thing that when you think of like pure Buddhism, something that pops into my mind is like those like Silicon Valley bros, you know, that are also Buddhists. So, is that Buddhism?
they think it was Buddhism.
Yeah.
And that has become so hugely fashionable. There's no doubt about it that in the changing world of, you know, contemporary business practice and the like, and especially of high technology, Buddhism is perfectly suited to this notion of you constantly developing yourself, and that's totally down the technological route, isn't it, where we think we can find a device to purify our lives.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, Peter, it's been great talking to you, but we've got to wrap it up in a bit. Do you have any last things you want to say about the topic?
I just recommend you to go to a slideshow if you get the chance.
Well, if I get the chance, I'll tell them that Peter Lynham sent me.
Very good.
All right, it was great talking to you. Bye-bye.
Okay, see you. Bye-bye.